From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 106, recorded live Monday, March 24th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott sits down with Vinat and Venkat, two Microsoft regional directors, and gets their inside perspective on outsourcing.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here at Mix08, and we're going to be talking about outsourcing. I've got Venkat from Chennai and Vinod from Delhi, and these gentlemen both own companies that do work overseas, and they're based in these respective cities. And we were talking in the hallway a moment ago about outsourcing, and as someone who's an American, I have a lot of interest in this, because certainly I want my country to do well, but at the same time, I want the world to do well. And I thought it was interesting that I had read somewhere that getting a condo in downtown Bangalore was about $250,000. And it's U.S. dollars. And I could go and buy a condo, maybe even two condos, in my hometown for that much money. Why would I outsource if the cost overseas is so much more now?
Yeah, it's true the cost is increasing in India. That's one of the challenges. Both of us run small outfits in India. And the biggest cost for us is the rising salary cost. But I think over the years, as the industry is maturing, what will happen is it's the niche players will survive. So it is not for the cost reasons you'll outsource to India, but you'll outsource for the specialty, the niche. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you'll outsource for the scale. The big Indian companies today can give you the scales, which are not possible, which are only possible probably by the big names like Accenture and the IBMs. So you want scale, you want like 500 people to be put on a project, then you will go to India to outsource. So the game will change from cost to niche, specialty, and to scale.
Now, it seems to me, though, and forgive me if you find this to be, I don't mean to insult, but I find that Americans are, and I'm making a broad statement here, sometimes more creative but less raw horsepower analytical than people from overseas. Is that as a result of education? I know that America values independent thinking, and you know, you're a unique snowflake, maybe a little bit more than the raw analytical horsepower that other countries' educational systems.
Yep, there's nothing, of course, insulting about this, because it's more a fact, and different cultures work differently. My observation purely is the amount of risk-taking and the encouragement the society, the family, friends gives in America is a lot more than in India. I can talk about our personal experiences. When I started my company, many people looked at me, why are you starting this? Why can't you just go to a job? And today, jobs in India pay very handsome. $50,000 to $100,000 year are jobs you can easily get in India. It's not unheard of. 5 years before, it would have been crazy. And last week, I was in my college where I did my engineering, and the college principal was saying one of the biggest problems they are facing is like at the third year, it's a four-year course, third year, the people are getting their campus interviews done and they are getting a job. So they are losing interest in the actual education because he has actually got a job much before he finishes it. Yeah. So the principal says that the third year, he hasn't even graduated, he's going to earn much more than me. So that's the challenge. So coming back to your question, the way our education system has been structured traditionally is been valuing on the actual memory and reciting it correctly. That's right. The way. I think slowly it's changing and kind of taking the best of both worlds, taking that, and the American way of education is also slowly coming in. And more people now, we see a lot of people coming back from US back to India, they are bringing in that creative thinking also. So no more, you're not look crazy if you start a company in India anymore. So things are changing, but traditionally it's been, value is given more for the hardcore memory and doing things the the same way, doing it correctly,
learning, yeah,
than creativity, than experimenting.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the things that I'd like to add on to that is that, yes, creativity is something that I think we are a little behind America. We are great implementers. So if Americans give us the creative idea, I think Indians implement it very, very well. But out of the box, coming and thinking and coming up with ideas, not very good. And I, as Venkat very rightly put it, I think part of it, a blame, if you want to call it, is the education system. It's good in some ways because we are very good engineers, we are very good implementers, but in terms of thinking out of the box, that's not really stressed upon in our education system.
Now, certainly there are Indians and people, I'm not saying that America has it all locked up when it comes to creativity, but it definitely seems like you're not encouraged from an educational perspective. I mean, I went to this. I went to a public school in the U.S. and there was always this notion of expressing yourself creatively. And I think in high school we only went up as far as pre-calculus. So when we came out as an 18 or 19 year old, we had done just the basics of pre-calculus. Now there are what are called AP courses or advanced placement, where kids that showed a propensity towards math could have potentially gone and started doing college courses in when they were 18. So you could potentially come out of a 4-year high school degree at 18 with some understanding of calculus. At what level do you learn these things in an Indian school system?
Well, our high schools, I think when we come out of school, we're experts at calculus. Otherwise, we don't pass out of school, especially if you've taken the science courses.
Really?
So if you've taken sciences, and even if you're doing something like biology, which has probably very little to do with maths, mm-hmm. You still do a lot of calculus in that. So if you've taken computers, you better be a rocket scientist. So, yeah.
Now, is it still based on the O-levels, A-levels system, like the British colonial system of education, or has that changed?
That option is still there, but we have our own Central Board of Secondary Education, a couple of other boards as well. But this option is still there as well.
How do you gentlemen think that the echoes of colonialism are affecting both the political structure and kind of like the societal structure, but also the way people feel about themselves? I mean, has India come into its own and finally pushed the shackles off?
Well, the youth is. I mean, our generation would probably be the last ones to have that colonial, the throwback.
Yeah,
that's probably
that
because of the,
on your mind.
The mindset.
Yeah.
Because of our parents, because they have seen that and, passed that on. But since we haven't seen it, we only have a secondhand interaction with this colonial thing. So our kids will probably not have that at all. The youth does not have that at all these days.
I think there is very little leftovers of the colonialism. It's been like more than 60 years now. But you still find it in the way the government functions and the way the education system overall is. But I think India is very good in adapting anything. More than any of the occupiers, even if you see the Mughals who came down historically to India, they became more Indianized. So even if pizza comes to India, it is Indianized. So it's the people earlier, about 10, 15 years back when globalization came to India, they were worried that globalization will take or will corrupt India. But I think it's more the globalization that is getting, if you want to use corruption, by India. It's getting influenced, I will say, definitely by the way India, you are celebrating Diwali and having curry in the British Parliament. That's how the influence is going. And I think India normally takes it up and makes its own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even if you say the government parliament system is British, mm-hmm. I think the way India use parliament system is like excellent. So one of the things I keep jokingly telling my friends, US should be outsourcing its elections to India because we run it for 1 billion people.
Yeah.
And we don't have a problem of people not knowing. And these are illiterate people, like 40 to 50% of those who vote.
You put a picture of who's on the ballot.
We have symbols.
Symbols?
For each candidate.
Okay.
The party that he represents, there will be elephants, there will be boxes, there will be kite, pin, etc.
So see, we would have two pieces of paper, one with a picture of an elephant and one with a picture of a donkey.
Yes. Now, even in paper, so people correctly vote. So you go to an illiterate person and you say who you voted for, he says exactly this is the party I wanted to vote. Mm-hmm. This is the symbol I voted for them. Mm-hmm. And last 10 or 12 years, we are only doing electronic voting. Mm-hmm. And in few hours, we get the results. And remember, we are talking about an election where 700 million people, more than the U.S. population, votes every year, every time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin, the producer of Hansel Minutes, with a message from Telerik. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? Right. You just can't. In order to have next-generation web apps, you need next-generation components. And that's exactly what our friends at Telerik have for you. Their upcoming product, codenamed Rad Controls Prometheus, is a huge pack of web controls built on top of Microsoft ASP.NET AJAX, which will add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. Just listen to this. The new controls mirror the ASP.NET AJAX API, so development is straightforward. Client scripts are shared, so loading time is pretty much instant. And if you just set a couple of properties, you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for even more efficient operation. After all, the facts speak for themselves. The new RAD editor for ASP.NET AJAX loads up to 4 times faster than before. Similarly, RAD Grid handles thousands of records in mere milliseconds. But again, it's best to try for yourself. Visit Telerik.com/ASP.NET AJAX and download a trial. And don't forget to thank them for supporting Hansel Minutes.
Now, you bring up an interesting point, though. We've spoken about people making $50,000, $100,000 in India, living in $250,000 condos, but then you just spoke of illiterate people. There is a societal caste system, the classic kind of, you know, Brahmin through untouchables system in India that is still applied, whether people acknowledge it or not. It still exists. But now, don't you think that there is a parallel economic system? I mean, we're talking about people living on $1 a month and people living on $100,000. Don't you think that there's going to be a pretty significant, more than in any other country, schism between the haves and the have-nots?
See, one of the differences between China and India here is the value the economy actually drills down a lot more in India. That's my personal opinion.
Because, what do you mean, drills down? Like trickle down?
Trickle down. So if somebody is earning $10,000, $20,000 a year, he gets a driver. See, one of the most difficult people to recruit in India, in the urban cities, is a driver. Is a chauffeur to drive you.
Mm-hmm.
And
a chauffeur?
Chauffeur to drive you. And
okay.
They are very expensive. Their salaries have like doubled or tripled in the last few years.
Mm.
And you have maids, you have people who help you, and the whole ecosystem, the money actually drills down, trickles down.
You're a Reagan economic. You believe in Reaganomics. Ronald Reagan believed in this notion of trickle-down economics. You know, when the success at one level trickles down to the entire system and everyone wins.
Yes, it definitely happens. And there's also a cultural difference. In India, people don't like to show off the wealth in general. Even if you're wealthy, you don't show off that.
Mm.
So,
except when you get married.
Yes.
Because I think that people who make $1 a month don't rent an elephant.
Yes.
Okay.
So that trickle effect is happening, and one of the biggest challenges is how do you help the rural economy?
Yeah.
Recently, in one of the TVs I read, like 60% of Indian population resides in the rural, but then only 38% of them actually are into agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like 72% or 62% of people who are in rural area,
okay,
but are not doing agriculture. How do you keep them employed? That's the biggest challenge in front of the government.
So you're saying 2/3 of people who live in rural areas are not actively farming?
Yes.
What are they doing?
Well, they do a lot of other activities. In fact, we were involved in a Government of India program, which right now has run into a controversy for other reasons, which was meant to give employment to a lot of people, employment for things like building roads or creating canals. So the government was supposed to do this, and it went on for quite a while. But very recently, in fact, as recently as last week, there was some controversy about irregularities in that system.
Mm-hmm.
But So a lot of people are sitting unemployed. A lot of people are doing daily wages work in that. So, in fact, when you talk about this large schism between the haves and the have-nots, it's mostly in the metropolitan areas. I think the six big cities in India. The rest of India is still in that, well, not rural, but semi-urban to rural.
Right. Just outside of town.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Interestingly, again, one of the biggest phenomena in India which is happening is the retail boom. Walmart is tied up with a local partner in India to do retails. And initially, even as recently as 3-4 years, we ourselves were skeptical about how retail will work. There's political backlash saying that retail is an MNC, an organized thing, taking over the small and mom and pop shops, which actually gives about 80-90% of the people in rural urban areas the employment.
It's like everyone in India owns a mom and pop shop in some
way. Kind of. And they're pretty successful in that. And so there was a huge talk on that political backlash. But one of the things that are now emerging is the rural people are also adapting. They have this need for organized retail. So a popular chain in India is called Pantaloons. They are part of a future group. One of the, in the Kishore Biyani is their CEO. He talks about in his book saying the retail outlets in rural actually do much more turnovers than some of their urban outlets.
Turnover of product. They move more product.
Yes. And they say, and he says it's not the same packeted stuff that I sell there, but I sell oil and loose, meaning you can bring a bottle, buy oil. They will just measure it and pour it down.
Right.
So it's not in a packet. It's not about hygiene, though hygiene is important.
Right. You're saying that they provide services that a large place just can't effectively provide.
Correct. So what he says is we are organized, but we have to be tailored,
right. See,
customized.
That's what's happening in retail in the U.S., that when a retailer comes in and they commoditize something, then a small mom-and-pop shop provides a specialty, provides special service or attentiveness. They say that, well, we answer the phone when you call us as opposed to you getting a recording. And then, of course, there's a back and forth as retail tries to make that happen.
True. In fact, one of the cultures that have very recently come up, I think probably in the last 2 years, is the mall culture, something that's been around in U.S. for a while. And in the last 2 years, if you see, India has had so many malls come up. The city that I live in, Gurgaon, which is a suburb of Delhi, has already something like 17 huge malls. And well, it's a suburb of Delhi. But you go to almost any semi-urban city now, it has a large mall with probably all the international brands that you can think of, Nike and Adidas and Reebok, and everybody is there. McDonald's.
Right.
So you get French fries even in a small little tiny city. So that's, you know, that globalization culture has already come in and everybody is aware of it and everybody is taking part in that.
As citizens of your nation, do you feel that the kind of the meta virus of America's meta culture has infected your culture? I mean, do you really think that once every single square inch of this planet is covered in malls and I can buy a Coach bag in any city in the world, that's a good thing? I mean, malls are opening and closing. Retail space in America right now the inventory is at an all-time high. You know, something like 25% of retail space is wide open. There's buildings going up and then they'll sit there for months with a for lease sign because we got a little ahead of ourselves. It seems to me like this is not a sustainable system, and now we're exporting it to you guys. It makes me sad if you're telling me the small town you live in is
absolutely. I mean, what you said is absolutely right. I mean, we, as I said again, 17 malls in probably a 20 square kilometer city.
How many people in your city?
In Gurgaon, probably about a few million.
See, we've got a million in Portland where I live, and we've got maybe 4 good malls, but there's at least 30-40 miles between each one. I mean, they're really spread out.
Yeah.
And inside those malls, there's a lot of places going out of business.
Right. This is a 20 square kilometer suburb of New Delhi and 17 malls.
It's about 10
many of them
miles.
Are sitting empty as you rightly put it. But to answer the second part of your question, whether I think that it's getting infected, Well, infection is too strong a word, but yes, there are. I think
it's a bit of a rash more than an infection, a big. It's spreading.
Yeah, it is spreading. Some things are good because hopefully, what we can do is pick up the good parts of it. We have done that before, as Venkat mentioned, right from Mughal times, and recently up to the masala pizzas that we have. So we do adapt and we do pick up the good things from whoever invades us in different ways.
But you're picking up consumerism.
Yes,
that's different. I mean, you can make curry pizza and you can take the sacred cows out of the hamburger, but ultimately, though, you are now consuming and throwing away.
I think it's more a short-term thing that these malls are coming up in India, but over a period, it'll stabilize. That is a huge need. For 20, 30 years, people didn't have this. So they wanted all this. They didn't have it. So everybody's just rushing to it. And the mad rush will kind of equal itself.
To want is a very, very strong drug.
Yes. But I think consumerism, you pointed out, that brings in a very interesting thing. Every time when I come to the U.S., one of the things that hits me is the amount of food that you get everywhere and the amount of food you waste.
Right.
Because in my culture, right from my school days, my mother will kill me even if I waste something in the dinner or in the lunch. We were made to value each and every rice piece that we get in the table. But here in the U.S., that's something that really scares me, worries me when I have to eat something and throw away the rest.
Yeah.
50%, that really troubles. So the reason I'm saying that, so even if malls come to India, they will be over a period adapted to the Indian way of doing things.
Interesting. How do you feel from your country looking into ours? Do you feel sympathetic when you see on the news that Americans feel that you're taking jobs? And do you feel that we're taking jobs from you?
I don't think so, because in a globalized world, these things will happen. Over a period, I think it is for the good.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I think even if you look at the U.S. economy with the oil prices going, with war, everything, the economy is growing. Overall, the world economy is also growing. So globalization definitely works. In the short terms, we have to give some price, but I think that's why the local governments can control and safeguard the people's short-term interest over the long term. So kind of from India, looking at the U.S., it's more neutral because, as I said, 70%, 80% of the people don't even have an impact on U.S. or what happening there.
Mm-hmm.
But they know about U.S., so it's definitely their opinion will be more neutral because they are not affected by any of the things that happen.
Well, I really appreciate you guys taking a moment to sit down with me today. I appreciate both of your perspectives. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.